April the 6th, and I call the True Commission meeting to order. Will we please have the introductions? Start with you, Mr. Jones.
My name is Carter Jones.
And were you from CPAC or?
Appointed by the City Council President.
Thank you.
Tommy Carter, Council Auditor's Office.
Bruce Tyson, CPAC 4.
Dr. Chambliss, appointed by the President of City Council.
Charles Barr, appointed by the President of City Council.
Delma Roundsville, Northwest CPAC, number 5.
Jeff Clements, Council Research.
Thank you. We do have a quorum, so we'll move on to the approval of the minutes.
I move that we approve the minutes with any necessary corrections.
For a second?
Second.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Public comment. So we'll move on to the auditor's report.
This is good.
Yes, ma'am. Chair to the commission, Council Auditor's Office released one report since the last True Commission meeting. There were also three reports that were not covered during the March 2nd True Commission meeting, due to the timing of the release of these reports, as they had not yet been presented to the Finance Committee. However, I'll be presenting those also today. So report number 866, which was the quarterly summary for the 3 months ended December 31, 2022, was released on February 15th of 2023. This is the first quarter of quarterly summary for the first quarter of the fiscal year. Good news, we did get a city quarterly summary this time, so yes. Just some highlights. The general fund is projecting and bear in mind this is the first quarter, so really when you want to start looking deeper, the second quarter and the third quarter are you more kind of get a better picture of things. But the for the first quarter, the projection for the general fund, general service district, is projecting a favorable variance in revenue of $14 million. That's mainly driven by projected favorable variance in ad valorem taxes, the franchise fees, JEA, and state's shared revenue for sales tax. The expenditures for the general fund general services district is projecting a favorable variance. In other words, expenditures are projected to be lower than what's budgeted of $23,497,878. The largest component of these variances are salaries and benefits, internal service charges, and professional and contractual services. The main driver under salaries and benefits is mainly JSO and JFRD salaries due to vacancies. For internal service charges, fleet charges are less than budgeted, and professional and contractual services are less than what was budgeted. For the independent agencies, there were a number of funds. There were several funds that had a negative budget variance being projected. The clerk of the court is projecting a negative budget variance. However, they have enough in the fund to absorb that, so that projection. Solid Waste Disposal Fund is projecting a negative variance. That has the loan from the general fund in it, totaling at the end of 2022-23, the total amount of the loan from the general fund is around $36 million. for that fund. The independent agencies, JEA, all systems, we're expecting a balanced budget at year end. And general fund contribution is expected to be remitted to the city. Fuel expenses are projected to come in $65 million less than budget. On the electric side, budget amendments will be needed through the city council for the use of $60 million in reserves. And it's for an unbudgeted contribution to the non-fuel purchase power rate stabilization fund, and that's for the plant Bogle payments. And then there's increases to capital project funding, and for a $4.8 million projection in excess of council approved appropriations. So they'll need to come to the city council for a budget, their current budget. For JTA, all divisions projected a balanced budget at year end. The bus division is projecting a $7.8 million positive surplus overall budget variance, and that's mainly due to net sales tax and local option gas tax coming in higher than anticipated. JTA does have contingency dollars in its expenditures, but they're not projected to be utilized. We will note that the 21-22 budget, which JTA's expenditures exceeded their council appropriations, that budget amendment still has not been presented to city council. The JTA's boards approved it, but it has not been introduced as of yet. For JPA, they're projecting a balanced budget at year end with an expected surplus of $2.7 million, mainly due to cruise ship revenues performing better than budget. They have higher investment income than budgeted, and as well as lower debt service cost. For JAA, they're projecting a balanced budget at year end with an expected surplus of $23 million at year end mainly due to parking revenue exceeding budget due to increase in passengers. They're having savings in repairs and maintenance that are due to the later start dates for future projects. Higher than budget investment income, and then they have some debt service savings from JAA paying off debt early in 21-22. That's an overview of the first quarter. If anybody has any questions on that.
Were there any questions that happened during Finance Committee since this wasn't this the first quarterly summer we have in the last 3 years?
It was, yes. No, I don't recall that they had any questions particularly.
And as I told the group before you arrived, the city did present its quarterly summary.
I've been beaming enthusiasm for the last 3 years for it.
Second report number 792B. It was a follow-up on risk management compensation audit. This was released on February 27th of 2023. This report is the second follow-up on this audit. There were 11 issues, and all issues during this were cleared during this follow-up. So this audit will be considered cleared. They've implemented our recommendations, and will be closed for risk management workers' compensation. Report number 859A, which is the follow-up on the Duval County Property Appraiser Audit. It was also released on February 27th, and there were four findings on this follow-up. This was the first follow-up, and all four findings were cleared, and so this audit will be considered closed and move on. So, fourth report is report number 867, city payroll, leave payouts at separation of employment was released on March 8th, 2023. Overall conclusion on this was overall the city has accurately paid employees for accrued leave upon separation of employment. We found significant errors and process issues that impacted accuracy of payments to individual employees. Based on detailed testing and analytical testing, a net amount of $117,931 was paid to employees due to calculation of errors. main reason caused by this is much of this process is this is also the one, and this is one of the reasons why we did this review. We were working on another project, and our office identified the overpayment of $138,000 to a city employee that separated employment. And so from that, the overpayment was due to an input error where a pay rate was entered into the system. $365.44 per hour instead of $37.45 per hour. And it was mainly for COVID overtime leave that they were paying for employee. I will note that when we found this error, the city's been unable to recover these funds. The discovery of the error was the reason we conducted this audit. And like I said, mainly the underlying, if you wanted a bottom line overview of this summary of the audit, is it's mainly a manual process and it needs to be automated. A lot of input going on, and it comes from that. Did find some, you know, areas where there were no issues noted, but I believe it's in the, it's become a legal matter now. So
I saw on television. So I guess eventually going to come up with a plan to get him for a repayment plan for the individual.
That will be the
next step, probably.
First question is going to be: does that individual have a legal obligation to send it back?
Saw that.
Does the audit kind of detail the process in which under normal circumstances what's supposed to happen when they're separating from the city and they're calculating leave?
Mainly go into how we tested the process. Finding one,
it talks about when an employee separates employment from the city, the central payroll office receives a request for the accrued leave hours to be paid out. It manually calculates the pay rate for those hours. The rate is calculated by adding the base salary rate and any recurring incentives. JSO has the most incentives.
Some incentives are included in payout.
Some are not. So
anyway, that's
the base of how it happens.
So why is it not calculated automatically by OneCloud?
That module's not in effect yet.
So
accounting system's in.
But this is the next step for that. And JSO
that I know, but I thought eventually we're supposed to integrate into the cities.
Exactly. Eventually.
Was this a city employee or was this a
JSO employee? You can see the television.
I didn't see it.
Television.
I'm shocked. Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. Did they, for that kind of payout to go out, there is no second layer of review that occurs after that that input is made at all?
Well,
Tommy, I think I can answer that one.
Okay.
When Kim Taylor presented this at the Finance Committee, they asked Joey Grivey up to the podium to talk about it. And apparently there had not been a double check before they sent the check out. So once they identified this problem, they've instituted a policy that any payment over $7,500 has to be verified by a supervisor before the check gets cut to make sure that the calculation was done properly.
So when the check is, when the person makes the input before the policy, when the check gets cut, when the it gets entered into the system, are they the same individual that would initiate the process for the check to be cut, or does that go to a secondary person for that payroll check to?
That I don't know.
I wasn't on the audit, so I'm not sure how their process would go from there. It would probably move along with the whole payroll part once they do the calculation. Someone does the calculation and then it's added on to.
And then my final question, when is that portion of OneCloud supposed to go live? Any other questions on that audit?
You asked them all.
To our new members, you'll, and it's honestly not his fault, but there'll be many moments where you hear the audit reports and you kind of just think, what happened there? But it's part of the process.
There are no other questions. This concludes my report.
Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Carter? Thank you, sir. All right, so. Oh, I apologize. Is there any public comment that either one of you wanted to provide? All right, well, thank you for being here. Appreciate your attendance. And I'm assuming you already approved the minutes?
Yep.
All right, so at our last meeting, towards the tail end of it, we had a discussion on the capital improvement program. CIP, essentially the method in which the city on a year-to-year basis does investment in infrastructure across the city. Based on that conversation and based on some of the comments that Mr. Grivey made at the beginning of our meeting, there were still some tail-end questions that some of the commissioners had in regards to how the CIP is developed prior to budget presentation. And in essence, for the members that weren't present for that discussion, what we got to was prior to the budget being presented by the mayor, which includes the CIP separately, individual CPACs may get inquiries from the administration to recommend certain infrastructure projects for their areas. Outside of that, individual council members may advocate to the administration for a particular project to be included. But outside of those two large sale groups, there wasn't really an answer we kind of got in terms of how the person on the general public would be able to recommend certain spending in their neighborhoods that they may see that their individual CPAC or council member may be completely unaware of. So we took from that discussion that we wanted to be able to put this on today's agenda so that way we can kind of formulate our thoughts in terms of what additional questions we may ask or suggestions that we may want to contemplate. But in that interim, we were able to get this presentation emailed to all of you, and hopefully everyone got a chance to review it from Teresa Eichner. Is that how you pronounce her last name?
Correct. And she was the person who handled the CIP. She was the CIP manager for a number of years for the mayor's office, for the finance department. And then just maybe 5 or 6 months ago came to work for the city council. And she gave this presentation to the council staff. Once a month we have presentations on various topics about the budget or about redistricting, just so the staff can kind of understand what their council members are dealing with. And she made this presentation in March on the CIP, and I thought, well, this might help you all to get a handle on how things are done there. And I think it does provide a little more information than Mr. Grivey gave you on a couple of topics, one of which is, you know, ways to get things into the CIP, or at least suggest them and get them in front of the people who actually put it together. And then the other thing that I thought was worth bringing to your attention was the fact that probably 3, 4, or 5 years ago, the city council adopted a couple of ordinances that mandated certain amounts of money be put in the CIP for different kinds of expenditures.
Required spending.
Required, yeah. There are suggested minimums and targets.
Okay.
And
which page should we?
What page?
It says municipal code. It's about the fourth or fifth page back.
Okay. Thank you so much.
And there's a couple of different ones. There's one, certain amount has to be set aside for capital maintenance every year. Trying to think what the 42 million in recurring minimums. I think some of that was for stormwater projects. And then the urban core, that ordinance 2024-18, Matt Carlucci proposed that 17% of the CIP budget every year needs to go to the pre-consolidation old core city area. And so that's a specific table in the CIP where the administration lists the projects that meet that requirement to show that they've spent at least the 17%.
Were there other, because I'm assuming were you in the presentation in March as well?
Yes, I was there.
Then I'm going to lean on you because you have the benefit of hindsight. You were there. Are there, based on the discussion that we had in February and then what you heard in the presentation from March, are there other points that you think that we should be aware of that would be insightful?
Well, one thing that she did say, in fact, on that same page, there is an ordinance that requires that all of the CPACs be consulted each year and asked for their input as to what they would like to see in the CIP. So that's more than just an administrative practice. That's an ordinance code requirement.
That's good.
Another thing was, let's see. If you go to the page that says process start to finish, it's about the fourth page or so. It talks about there being an internal CIP committee that's made up of the finance department, the planning department, and the public works department. Those are the process start to finish.
Oh, third page, yeah. Overthought it. Thank you.
That's, I guess, one person from each of those departments forms this committee to put the beginnings of it together. They're the ones that use the scoring matrix. And I thought this was worth mentioning. The internal committee uses a scoring matrix developed around the mayor's priorities to review and score projects. So that's one of the questions you asked was, well, how do, what gets in and what doesn't get in? Well, what gets in is what conforms to the mayor's priorities.
What about the council's priorities?
Well, the council gets their chance at it when the mayor presents a proposed CIP to the council, and then it's their job to work it from there.
Three departments involved, or three people involved in
finance, planning, and public works. And that internal committee comes up with a proposed list of projects. That goes to the mayor's budget review committee, which is the mayor's, basically the mayor's staff, his chief administrative officer, the finance officer, deputy CAO. They're the ones who put the final stamp on it before it goes to council. She did say the other about how projects get in. As Mr. Grivey said, CPACs are all asked for their input. Individual council members are, you know, suggest projects all the time that they think need to be done.
And I know Neighborhoods is the one that's responsible for staffing the CPACs.
Correct.
Do they do training on a yearly basis to make sure people are aware of how CPAC works? Because I believe Commissioner Tyson made a point at the last meeting saying that a lot of times there's confusion in the CPACs in terms of how it works and what kind of things they can recommend.
That I have no knowledge of.
I know this particular in our CPAC, we find out about it, we form a committee that gets together, they reach out to the neighborhoods that are part of our CPAC and come up with recommendations, and then we take them and we discuss them with that meeting. So we go pretty much in depth with it, and then if they have questions, if the committee has questions, we refer to our neighborhood leader. We haven't had any problems in understanding.
Is that a practice that's universal for all the CPACs, or did you guys kind of come?
Mr. Tyson, how do they do
it in yours? Well, basically, what happens is, brought up, but they explain basically how, you know, what your limits are, minimums, maximums, etc. And then they just ask everybody to put in their inputs to our coordinator, and she would bring them to put them all together and bring them back to us. The problem we have is getting people to submit. A lot of that comes because it's representation to come from the different communities, neighborhoods, and communities to give you an input. And then when something doesn't happen, they want to come back. Well, why do you need to do this? Yeah. So, well, did you ask us before when we asked you? And it's like, well, I didn't understand.
We have a pretty robust CPAC.
We're trying.
I will add that the one other thing that she mentioned is care system, the city's care system, 630 City. If you call in, they use the data from that. If there's a lot of complaints about the condition of a road or a bridge is in bad shape or a park is in terrible condition, that gets taken into account when the departments are putting together their proposed CIP lists. So anything that's gotten a lot of complaints in the care system will be looked at as a potential project to get taken care of. Now, maybe not the first year, but as you know, it's a five-year process, so they may put it in the second or third or fourth year. But that's another way for the public to have input, is to, if you see something wrong, file a complaint with the care system, and that'll get logged and taken into consideration.
Go ahead.
Is that, maybe you're going to ask the same thing, is that information that is something that would be available to a CPAC so they can see what complaints are coming in as well? So we could.
That's a good question. I don't know how.
When it comes to the council, they have, if the committee takes it into consideration, maybe if there's also consideration of pushing coming from the CPAC, be a little more weight to add to their discussion. If we've got a request from the CPAC, to, and maybe if they do it through what CPAC requests, then maybe their department would have to come out of their budget or their push. So just wondering if there's a way to get that in.
That's a good question, yeah.
Because it would certainly help.
I'm sure there is a way that they're all keyed by council district and possibly by CPAC district as well, based on the address of where the complaint is about. So I wouldn't doubt that somebody could manipulate the system and pull out all the ones in a certain area. But I don't have no idea how that works. I can find out.
Can you also find out, I was on the same wavelength, but I was also thinking, does those reports go to the internal committee that reviews these projects or potential projects?
I don't know if it goes directly to them or if it goes to the department, if the departments each pull their list of care items, and that's how they come up with their departmental list, is the most largest number of complaints about something ends up top of their list.
I'm curious. I'm imagining, since she's done this for so long, a lot of this is in her head, and this presentation is very helpful. Is there a working policy document that describes this whole process? So it's like layered in writing in terms of how it works?
That I don't know, but I can ask.
I just want to verify the number is 630 CARE. For them to make the complaints?
630 City, CITY.
Oh, I call that all the time. I'm not
but
sure.
That is the care system.
Okay, but I call that number all the time. Okay, but thank you. Just want to make sure I'm covering all bases.
And did she share in terms of the matrix that they use?
No.
She said it's based on the mayor's priorities. What makes up that matrix?
No.
Is it a scoring system? Is it... He wants that, so let's do that. Or
we didn't get any details on what the matrix is like.
Can we request the matrix?
Sure.
It's just a natural question. The next question. While Mr. Clemens is making that list, did anyone else have any thoughts about the CIP at all? I don't know whether or not you got a chance to review it beforehand, so you may be seeing it for the first time.
Now we think about in the future bringing them back.
I think that's the next question. I think once we're able to kind of get those answers, we'll be in a better position to understand what we're looking for and what the full picture is. Because I don't think we can really make recommendations in terms of the CIP process in general if we don't have the full layered process in terms of how it works. This gives a great overview on how it processes, which is actually very helpful. Mm-hmm. I think there's still some questions that still need to be answered. Did anyone else have any thoughts on the presentation or the CIP in general?
I also wonder, since they made a probably passed a law probably about a year or two ago about when you call them to make complaints,
or what have you, that you have to give out all your information, which is not always good and safe. And so I wonder, do you get, is it less complaints now because now you, unless somebody give an anonymous name, not anonymous name, but, you know, a fake name or something, because that could be, you know, I wonder, has it changed? Has the amount of complaints changed? Has it reduced because of you have to give so much information now?
Yeah, that's a fair point. Do you know when that change happened?
Probably about, what was it, about 2 years ago, almost 2 years ago? Yeah, about 2 years. And I don't know why they did that.
I was going to say, I wonder why that changed.
Yeah, it didn't make any sense. You know, if you want to complain, you know, you might have a crazy neighbor, so you don't necessarily want to give out all your information. Used to have an option, but no, there's no option. And then they said,
My CPAC is the number of people calling complaints has dropped.
Yeah, I know. It will drop now because of that. So then, therefore, when they do the matrix and they're talking about, you know, this is priority, this is second, this is third, this is fourth, well, that's going to, you know, probably decrease or go to the bottom of the barrel because the people don't want to, you know, leave their information. You don't. Again, that could be a safety issue.
Sometimes when we have recommend that if you are concerned about something, to contact them, to contact your city council representative, and they can, you know, put in a request or ask what's going on without, you know, giving your name or whatever. So that's about one alternative. I know that we have recommended our city council person.
But if you have a city council person that doesn't return your phone call, that's not going to happen. I'm just saying if you have a representation that does not, you know, call back, then
I understand.
Then they're just, you know, that's just not fair to them.
It's a problem.
Yes, ma'am. Yes. Once that we elect Jesus.
Any other comments on capital improvement before we move on to committee reports?
I would just like to add that I would definitely want more information on what the scoring matrix would be
that. Do you have any thoughts as to anything else in that in the presentation? So that way when Jeff makes the request, we can get everything that we want before we have.
Definitely liked, I think it was Ms. Chambliss brought up, how we definitely, a database of, hey, you know, City Council District 12, we had 5 complaints. That would definitely also be very useful so that City council member cares, they can look and go, okay, so this is the problem, this is the problem. I really like that as well.
Okay.
That was very good.
Okay, cool. So, Jeff, can we make sure that that's counseled in a way of we know if that information goes to the internal committee, the CPACs, which I think generally are the answer to that, but also to the council member as well? I think a lot of times departments may produce a report, but some people may never actually get to see it.
That's good. Good information.
I know you said before that since she was in a new position, Mr. Clements was hesitant to kind of have her present on it. So how did she end up doing the presentation for this?
Like I said, we have... the city council has a relatively new director, came in a year ago this month, I think. And since she's been there for the last maybe 5 or 6 months, she likes to do a talk every month just to the staff, to the ECAs and the rest of the staff to inform us about issues, especially for the ECAs and also for the legislative folks who staff the committee meetings, just to sort of give them a basic understanding of how some issues work so that when people come flocking into meetings all fired up about something, they'll have some understanding of what, you know, what are all these people doing here? She's talked about the budget, how does the budget process work just in general? We did redistricting was one. One was on the history of consolidation, just, you know, a variety of things like that. And this just happened to be one that with the budget season coming up, she thought, well, it would be good for everybody to know how the CIP process works. And since we have Teresa here who used to run it, why don't we just let her tell us how it works? So that's how that came to be.
All right. I know we don't have an audit committee, and legislative tracking, when we've done that report, is just based on individual members getting the, I think it's the biweekly emails that Jeff sends out about bill introductions and seeing if there's any bills that catch your attention. So it's a great way for us to be able to review new bills that are coming in, and if there's anything that kind of sparks an interest from us, we have an opportunity to come to this meeting, discuss it, and then determine whether or not we want to give a particular recommendation. Whether or not we want to is just determined on how passionate we kind of feel on the issue. So were there any bills that were introduced in the last month that any commissioner felt very passionate about or interested in particular? Jeff, one question I did have, and I was going to discuss it more when I get to the chair's comments. When I was in the Inspector General Selection Retention Committee, I asked Mr. LaSalle if there was an update on the procurement code redo that was introduced by Councilmember Cumber, and he said that it was just being
deferred
on finance. Is there a deadline or any kind of insight as to when the Finance Committee is going to pick that up?
There is not, although I'm trying to think what committee it was in. I think it may have been in Finance this past cycle that Chairman Bowman said he'd like to, since we're in the final couple of months of everybody's terms, he would like to kind of clear the decks of the agenda of things that have been hanging around for a while and get them out of the way before a new council comes in. So that's one that he mentioned he would like to take up and get done. So I think they're hoping that maybe the next cycle in committee that Ms. Cumber will come and talk about that bill and get some movement on it so they can get it out before the end of June.
And for everyone's benefit, so it's a whole redo of the city's procurement code. I think from what I remember, some of the biggest changes kind of had to deal with some of the requirements regarding solicitations and postings, requirements for the administration when it came to the committee that makes evaluations, who can be on an evaluation committee, who can't, and then kind of deals with some of the instances where the Inspector General felt that the process could be a lot better from some of the audits that he completed. So that's the only reason why I was interested in it in particularly. So I thought I'd ask. The only chair's comments I wanted to make, in addition to what I just mentioned, for the new members, the chair is an automatic member of the city's Inspector Selection Retention Committee. It's the committee that's responsible for selecting and retaining the city's inspector general. It's made up of the chair of the True Commission, chair of the Ethics Commission, council president, representative from the mayor's office, representative from the chief judge of the circuit court, representative from the public defender's office, and a representative from the state attorney's office. There was a investigation that the committee had asked for probably 3-4 months ago, where an employee had resigned, stating some allegations of feeling that she was being bullied. So we had asked the general counsel's office to investigate that to see if there was any merit to it, because she didn't make it in terms of a complaint. She just stated it in a resignation letter. The results of that investigation essentially was that they recommended the IG and the employees within the office, many of them are new, not carryovers from the old regime, take additional training in regards to city policies about employment, but also how they deal with records requests, because there was a question as to whether or not they were fully cognizant or aware in terms of their obligations for complying with records requests when someone were to ask for it. That was the ultimate recommendation that they made, and we adopted that, and the IG agreed to ensure that his staff would complete that. So that was the result of that investigation. And then there was also discussion about the IG's eventual evaluation that will have to be done next month, and that will be his first one since he joined the city last year. That was a long meeting, but I'm glad we were able to find some resolution. It did get a lot of press attention. There was a lot of concern. At least we got the impression as a commission from the employees in terms of the tenor of what the report said. Basically, he said, she said. But there was a letter that all of the staff members signed afterwards, basically trying to put their thoughts in the record to kind of state they felt the confidence of the IG and that they were moving forward and that everything was a lot better than what it was kind of described in the report and based on that former employee's resignation. And a lot of members of the committee felt that letter definitely gave them more insight outside of just the report that was given, and they felt more comfortable about where the office was in general. Any questions on that? I feel like you have something to say, but you stopped yourself.
No, I think sometimes some of the questions I have are based upon the background that I come from and working more in corporate. So sometimes I think, is there some type of training when people come in that exposes them to some of these things that happen that are addressed on the back end rather than kind of what I was thinking.
I agree with that. There was like one in particular, well, two things in particular. The IG and his director of investigations both came from the federal government. They were an NCIS, so they didn't have as much experience on a state government level in terms of like sunshine. So that was one of those things where the general counsel's office felt they needed more training on, so that way they could better understand the environment that they were kind of working in. And then another example that I had mentioned during the meeting was she had complained that whenever she would have meetings with her boss, which was the director of investigations, that he would not shut the door because it was his policy that when he was interacting with female coworkers, he wouldn't shut the door, but if it was a male coworker, he would. So that's a clear violation of the city policy, because you can't treat employees differently based on their sex. So there were learning opportunities for everyone involved, and I think all of them kind of appreciated that afterwards. All right. Is there any old or new business that any member would like to address? All right. Commissioner comments, not to kind of put both of you on the spot, but I know this is your first meeting. So is there anything that you want to like introduce yourself so that way we can get to know you a little bit better? We're a friendly bunch, so promise you that.
Well, I'm Charles Barr. If you guys like nicknames, I go by Scooter. Yeah. I recently ran for city council. Of course, I didn't win, but it was Charles Scooter Barr. Mm-hmm. So if you call me Scooter, I'm good with that. I grew up here in Jacksonville, so I've been here my whole life, and I'm just excited. I don't fully understand every single thing you guys do. I don't know if anybody does when they first get on any kind of organization. But I tell you, I've been reading all the stuff that Jeff's been sending, and some of it is quite long.
Yes.
The stuff you talked about, the $345 an hour, that, I think we got that like a month ago on email. I had read all that, so I remember when you were talking about it, reading it. So I'm excited. So whatever changes we can do or help the city, I look forward to it.
Awesome.
And I appreciate you guys accepting me in here.
No problem. Happy to have you.
My name is My name is Carter Jones. Born and raised on the west side from Jacksonville. I live in Ocean Way now.
Okay.
I actually ran for Soil and Water Board back in 2020. Got 90,000 votes countywide, so okay. Too bad for a 20-year-old.
Okay.
Good for you.
But now I work with Florida Rock and Tank Lines as a dispatcher.
Okay.
So
I'm
glad to be here.
Right.
Where in the west side did you grow up?
Lena Wilson.
Ah, okay. I grew up off of in White House off of Chafee and Old Plank.
Oh, okay, cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's great to hear.
Ah. West side, best side. well, happy to have both of you. Honestly, these meetings, and I know you've come to a couple of them already. We kind of have a flow in terms of how we do it, but one of the things that a lot of us have been asking for, and I'm glad that you both are joining the committee, is more people. A lot of times we don't really have the capacity to be able to really look into things because we're all working, we all have personal lives, and when you only have like 2-3 people on the committee, it kind of prevents you from really being able to kind of dig your teeth in it. So with both of you here, we're really excited. I think Mr. Tyson kind of mentioned that a little bit when he was saying that a little bit earlier. But we're really looking forward to everything you both will be able to contribute to the committee. And I know all of you are really passionate about your communities in the city, and hopefully we'll be able to kind of come up with some good things that can help us become a better place to live. All right, so the next meeting that we have is on May the 4th. Oh, it says...
At the bottom, right here.
Okay, my bad. May the 4th. And before we kind of deal with the adjournment, is there anything specific outside of the questions that we're going to ask Mr. Clements to come back with that anyone would like on the agenda?
I'm quite sure it's going to make the news. I just want to see the outcome of the $137,000 given to that employee, that JSO officer. I'm curious to know the outcome of that. I know they're working on it. I know that's why I said I probably heard the news, but you know. Okay.
Oh. Which station should we tune into? Hopefully you guys will be able to see it at least on your phone in 5 minutes.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll show you.
And 10 and 11.
And seven. And I'm wondering also, would it affect him as, you know, as a, he's still employed, would it affect him if he doesn't? He's not?
He's retired.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's why he got the payout of his leave, was he was leaving employment.
Oh.
It's hard to manage, and that's why they one spoke over here.
Gee.
Right at the end, you know, one check mark could make the difference. Not all, we're all fallible. So.
No, I understand.
The backup.
Yeah, I got gotcha.
Yeah, I got a question. So, when JSO or J4D or City retires, if they retire on Friday and you retire a couple years ago, do you, how long will I work, it's a 2-month period. If you take lump sum, that way they know their T's are crossed and I's are dotted, so you don't run into this because it's hard to get money back.
Mm-hmm.
Once they give it to you, if you take the monthly plan, of course, the next month they can just
do it back. Yeah, that's true.
It all depends on what the payout is. Some of them, it's, if it's going to go towards pension, of course, it's monthly.
Okay.
But if it's like a leave payout,
mm-hmm.
it's generally a lump sum.
That's true.
Retired, you got a check.
Wow.
does the right pay cycle, exactly, and retirement date, like I did, are the same, you know. So you, they get it right then, but then having to wait a week to another pay cycle. But it will come whenever that pay cycle is. There is a little time for, you know, somebody to look into it. They think, well, that's not so far. Mm-hmm. And there are employees that have been in the city, they stayed with the city 30 years, they started with the old retirement plan. They may accrue, you know, 4 or 5 hours of lead time. And so when they retire, they cash in that lead time that they haven't used. The only thing I used to always wonder about if I worked on the pension plan, you get paid for that accrual at your present pay scale, not broken up into, hey, this 10 hours was at this pay scale here, and then this side was at this pay scale. So it's all that. So you may have started out with your first degree, you may, just for instance, you made $10 an hour. Now you've moved up and been here 30 years, you're making $30 an hour, so now you're going to get that whole 900 or 800 hours bonus at the $30 an hour.
That's good.
So it seems to me that if you accrue it, you know, I don't have a problem if you're accruing it, you get paid at the level that you're accrued at. That would be some way that they could put a program in that you get it for what you know. I know people that retired, they've gotten a check from the city for $200,000 for the recruiting pay. They were 35 years in the city.
My question is, you mentioned that the payroll system, the one cloud, they have not been, other agencies or entities are there left to still be brought up to the one cloud? Just out of curiosity.
Well, it's a step process.
Bless you.
Different processes, you know, like HR, timesheets, things like that.
Right.
And the accrual. The first was to get the accounting system on. Famous was very antiquated.
They ran into, of course, as you've heard
multiple times, there's a whole lot of issues with COVID and everything else and the merging of the data. This ERP Oracle system. That'll cover, you know, HR issues, timesheet issues. Hopefully, when all this is done, and I can't tell you when all this is done, everybody will have like the same timesheet type system. Right now, JSO has their own system.
Everybody has theirs.
Mine and Jeff's may be similar, but
time and attendance
time
system.
Time and attendance system, yeah. So it's, but not everybody's on TAS, you know. So, because like, for example, you have hourly workers, you know,
solid waste,
they're punching a clock. So trying to get them automated, they've come on a computer and their supervisors try to, you know, enter in the time. Still have, you know, hourly employees that, you know, they don't even touch a computer in their job.
They don't have a system, you know, terminal assigned to them or whatever. So, you know, we have those things to overcome as well.
Okay, so quite a challenge.
What, quite there. What about the contract management module that's supposed to be part of OneCloud? Can we ask that, Jeff, as one of our questions?
I'd like to know what modules are left to be implemented and timeline if they know.
And then I think one question I did have is, and I patiently waited, but when ITD said that they were going to do that inventory of all those systems and then produce a report, and then it was going to be able to identify what systems needed security-related fixing, whether we're going to come up with an in-house solution or something else. They said that that would be done at the beginning of the year. And this year. And that they would let us know. They didn't. So now I'm asking, since it's April, going on May. So if we can get that report that they created, that would be great. So that way we can know the results of it. Okay. Any other wish list items? Mm-mm. All right. Then with the meeting at its conclusion, I would entertain a motion to adjourn. All right. Seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none. Anyone opposed by unanimous consent? All right, we're adjourned. Thank you, everyone. See you on May the 4th. Okay, I was passing. Not for you. I was on.